Blog Talk Radio.
Jesus.
An old Cherokee is teaching his grandson about life. He tells the grandson, "There's a fight that's going on inside me. And this is a terrible fight. You see, this fight is between two wolves. One wolf is evil. It is anger and envy. It's full of sorrow, regret, greed, arrogance, self-pity, guilt, resentment, inferiority, lies, false pride, superiority, and ego." He continued, "The other wolf, this wolf is good. Joy, peace, love, full of hope, serenity and humility, kindness, benevolence, empathy, generosity, truth, compassion, and faith." This same fight, he tells the grandson, is going on inside you and inside every other person too. The grandson thought about it for a minute. He looked up and he asked his grandfather, "Well, grandfather, which wolf wins?" The old Cherokee just simply replied, "It's the wolf you feed." Good morning. It all just depends on what part of the world you are listening. Bienvenidos, Cape Town. Namaste, Oki. And welcome to another episode of the Greenhouse Effects Radio Show. My name is Will Green, holding down one half of our hosting duties, live every Monday and Wednesday night, 7 p.m. Central Standard Time, only on blogtalkradio.com/thegreenhouseeffect. We're live, only on Blog Talk Radio. Anyway, holding down the other half of our hosting duties, some call him the Lions historian, others call him Unc. I just simply call him my best friend because he's my dad, Bill Green. What's happening, Daddy-O? How you doing tonight?
Still too early to tell. I haven't had a chance to say that in a while. What's up, Wilfredo?
Man, good
interesting time between Monday and today, man. It's like never ending, right? Maybe we ought to consider having a show every night, Monday through Friday. like most talk show hosts do. But anyway, how you doing, man? I'm slide out the way for a minute and let you do your due diligence. But how you doing?
Yeah, I'm good. I'm good.
I'm standing.
You know, doing well. I'm glad to hear you. You say what?
Go ahead. Sorry.
I'm glad to hear you. You know, glad to hear everything's okay, because you mentioned these tornado warnings and hearings and stuff, and
yeah,
always get concerned about you down there.
Yeah, the weather got very turbulent in the middle of the night, and that's a scary thing for me anyway to wake up to. You know, just not expecting it. But anyway, you know, I'm going through a form of malaise, I guess. You know, I don't know. It's been a wearing week so far, and it's only half done. Yeah, but I'm reminded of my favorite quote. You know, by Ralph Ellison in his book Invisible Man, not The Invisible Man. That was a movie with Claude Rains. And I forgot who wrote it, but Invisible Man. You know, he said it is sometimes advantageous to be invisible, although it can be rather wearing on the nerves. And Ralph Ellison was a brother, so of course he was speaking from a perspective of brother throughout the book, you know. And it's obvious, that quote has just been resonating in my head since the Academy Awards. You know, that's what we used to call them back in my time, the Academy Awards, not the Oscars, you know. But,
right.
But anyway, so let me slide out the way, Mike, so you can go ahead and, you know, do what you do in only the way you can do it.
The Academy Awards. I'm writing my notes down. I'm ahead of the game here. I apologize. So, ladies and gentlemen, as we remind you at the beginning of every show, we just like to make sure that you've got something to write with. Grab a pen and pad, a pencil and paper, a post-it note, a marker, back of an envelope or a napkin if you got it. We just want to make sure if you have any questions, you don't forget any questions, any comments, anything you want to share with us or anything you might have picked up from our show tonight. We want to make sure that you have something to write it down with. You know, as Dad says, sometimes we shoot in the air and we kill the fish. So you'd be surprised what you hear sometimes on our shows. The second thing is that we have different ways for you to engage with us. One way is through our chat room, through the blogtalkradio.com website, blogtalkradio.com/thegreenhouseeffect. And you can access the chat room with your free Blog Talk Radio profile, or you can call in directly. Our number here, and I'm sure you've got a pen and pad by now, it's 516-453-6094. Again, 516-453-6094. Press 1 on your keypad. That'll put your number in our queue. And when we get through using our 1,000 words, we'll try to bring you in, but we will bring you in. And, of course, we keep the Facebook lines open as well. You can engage with us through the event page that Dad always sets up, which is always awesome, ladies and gentlemen. So, I always enjoy your moments to express, you know, small moments of artistry up on the event pages. So it's cool.
Yeah, all right. Looks like we might have a lonely night tonight, bro. Not that I'm complaining, mind you. You know, I have never seen a mic I didn't like.
Yeah, well, you know, people, you know, they're out there.
I know.
So many.
I'm not complaining. You know, I mean, like, for me, I won't be satisfied until we move our listening audience from those who we hope to hear from or expect to hear from or depend on to hear from, meaning friends and relatives, you know, into the broader audience of those who discover us for the first time, you know, and those who, you know, seek these kind of shows to gather, you know, a different form of information, you know, instead of the beaten path. But that's our work. That's our due diligence. And I truly believe that, you know, we will eventually strike oil. Not to say that what we haven't been able to do isn't striking oil, and definitely appreciate you know, the loyal followers, you know, the millions.
The millions.
That we have who listen to us regularly. But I'm kind of serious about, you know, I don't think it would jeopardize our rating, you know, if we did take on the ominous task of, you know, maybe putting together, you know, if not a weekly show, a daily show, but maybe an additional show, like either on Friday or Saturday morning. But I guess we could talk about that. You know, we don't have anything to lose.
Since you put it out there, I really enjoyed the Saturday shows that we used to do.
Yeah.
I mean,
yeah.
Number one,
yeah.
It was because of the content. But number two, Saturday just had a different kind of feel. It felt different,
Saturday
but it
morning.
Kind of felt the
yeah.
same. Yeah. It
yeah.
felt different,
Saturday
but it felt
morning.
The same. Yeah.
And it may be something to consider because it would be a good way to wrap up the week and a good
mm-hmm.
way to set up the next week, you know. So, yeah, let's talk about that. You know, let's talk about that, you know. Not now.
Right, right. Somebody, there's a listener out there saying, oh, my God. No, not now. No.
Yeah, okay, man. So where are we at? I mean, it's
man,
Monday.
You know, I think we're still, you know, dealing with the aftermath, the ripple effect, the
mm-hmm.
You know, everything that's happened since Will Smith violently attacked Chris Rock. No, seriously, since that slapping, there's still been so much, I think, that we're still dealing with, I think, and still talking about and stuff. You know, what do you think? You know, how
well,
are things looking on your end?
I think people are dealing with it in different ways, but I think one of the ways that, you know, people tend to deal with things, especially in our society, is to go mute, is to not have anything to say and just wish it would go away. Yeah, I mean, in so many different facets of our society, that almost always seems to be the formula of annoyance, you know, taking the center stage. And this particular situation affects me like so many others, however. And, you know, the one thing I'm so grateful about is having this outlet to sometimes give verbiage, sometimes give expression. No, I'm always giving expression to how I feel about certain situations that I think it's our responsibility to offer, to present to others. So it's been a roller coaster for me. And a lot of people, I'm sure, you know, would say, hey, you know, what's the big deal? Well, that's the question. Is it a big deal? You know, or is it overreaction? Well, I guess that's the question that that's been resonating inside of me. If it's a big deal, why? And if it's not, why not? And it's up and down. You know, when it first happened, it was like, wow, did anybody see what I just saw? Yeah, and it was like, okay.
Yeah.
And it was kind of a shock thing, so it was nothing else to be said. But then I found myself texting. Hey, did you just see that?
You know, it was your post that privied me to it. I read your post.
And
yours was the first one I saw.
Posted something on Facebook.
Yeah.
And it's like, you know, but it was looking for not so much what has happened since, but just an acknowledgement of the oh wow effect. But it has continued to snowball inside of me, and noticing since Sunday how so many in the entertainment industry have been brought to the forefront in comments they've made, and I'm just looking at a handful, and for the most part, you know, it's split down the middle, you know, like, but to me, it's like, okay. However, there's three elements that we're dealing with here to me. And I don't know why I keep saying to me, because obviously it's to me, else I wouldn't be saying it. Yeah, it's three forms of humiliation, you know, brought forth right on the TV screen, you know, Jada Pinkett Smith being humiliated, Will Smith I would imagine, you know, getting a twofold scoop of humiliation. And then Chris Rock being humiliated. And all three, you know, individualized, have endured their own aspect of humiliation, which caused me to ask. And, you know, the thing is, though, a person doesn't have to be humiliated to be humble. But it seems so often that that's where so many of us rediscover, you know, humility is through humiliation, which is, as we talk, which most people probably don't really grasp what its meaning is, because it's somewhat, you know, it's kind of, I can't think of the word right. My words keep metaphysical. Yeah, but shadow, you know, there's an element of shadow that many don't subscribe to, but just as many do. And all too often, it's the shadow in a person that brings the humiliation to the forefront, or the humiliating effect, and permits the opportunity for humility to be rediscovered. But we don't have to be humiliated to be humble. And I think these are three examples of humiliation and shadow through reaction, maybe not so much with those three or all three, but definitely with, well, to me, definitely with so many who have took it upon themselves to have something to say about it. Like Jim Carrey, you know, the comedian, you know, said, "I was sickened," you know, referring to Will Smith's standing ovation after receiving his award at the Oscar show. And he said, "I was sickened. It really felt like a real indication that we're not the cool club anymore." And what got me was the we, you know. So is he speaking we? Obviously, it's not as a black man. So he must be then speaking we, meaning, you know, the club of comedians. But using that word, we, you know, when this was a, you know, Chris Rock, Will Smith, Jada Pinkett situation, but nevertheless, he owned it as his own to make that comment, I guess in reference to the concern that comedians would have. Zoe Kravitz, I have no idea who Zoe Kravitz is. I'm kind of familiar with Kravitz, I think Lenny Kravitz.
Yes, you know, that's, who, that's her daughter. Yeah, that's her daughter.
That's his
Lisa,
daughter?
Yeah. Him
okay,
and Lisa
Bonet was married to Lenny Kravitz, which why I remember his name, because I couldn't stand him for being married to my girl. But anyway, you
okay.
know, and she said, Zoe Kravitz said, "We're apparently assaulting people on stage now." Mm-hmm. Then my boy, not my boy, but my dude, Kareem Abdul-Jabbar, right? Will Smith perpetuated the stereotypical black male violent tendency. Now, that's me paraphrasing what he said. But in essence, that's what he was saying about, you know, Will Smith having done what he did was perpetuating the black male myth, you know, the preponderance toward violence. Whoopi stepped into it, suggested racial dynamics stopped Will Smith from being removed, you know, from the ceremony. Interesting, I thought that that comment would have been made that, yeah, I kind of agree with. Touré, I don't have any idea who this dude Touré is. I used to see him on MSNBC a lot. Then I didn't see him anymore. Then he popped up on Joy Reid's show last night, you know, and he immediately came to the defense of Will Smith, saying from a personal platform, you know, that, you know, that's a black man's responsibility to defend his woman. And he would have felt necessary to in some form defend his woman as well if she had, you know, come under such a vicious attack. that's me saying vicious attack, but in essence my man was saying vicious attack by his voice, by his, you know, reflections in his voice, that, you know, Chris Rock just did this totally humiliating thing with this joke he told, you know, that my man wasn't sure, Touré, that is, wasn't sure how he would have responded if he would have taken the violent track, but he knows he would have, it would have been required for him to take some stand. You know, and Tiffany Haddish, I mean, we mentioned Monday, you know, that when I saw a black man stand up for his wife, that meant so much to me. So my question to her would be, meant so much? You know, was there episodes of violence in her life where no one came to her defense? You know, these are the kind of questions that pop in my head. Did she grow up in a violent environment, you know, where dad was the perpetrator? You know, there has to be something behind it meaning so much to her. And then Kathy Griffin, you know, the comedian, you know, now we, meaning comedians, all have to worry about who's going to be the next Will Smith, you know, meaning, you know, saying something out of line that someone would consider out of line anyway, and then being assaulted from it. So, you know, these themes, and I'm sure, you know, you've read just those and even more, but these themes point out, you know, to me, a very difficult situation, you know, for me as a black man, you know, to contend with, that everybody seems to have an opinion about what it's like to be a black man, you know, and everybody feels that, you know, that opinion is warranted. But where is Jada Smith in all this, you know, and, you know, what is the humiliating effect or the humiliating theme or the humiliating issue of Chris Rock making a joke? It's not like the three of them don't know each other. You know, it's not like the three of them have hung together. I don't know. Maybe Chris Rock knew that she had, what is it called again? Will, you say it so much better than me.
Alopecia.
Alopecia. I need to practice that. By next show, I'm going to have it down like you got alopecia. You know, one person made the comment, I can't remember which one of this crew, you know, maybe it was Touré, you know, who said, what if she had had MS? You know, would it have been all right for him to make a joke? I've never heard Chris Rock make such a kind of insensitive, almost, well, I've never heard him attack, you know, someone's condition like that. So maybe that's why I didn't think of him as attacking her condition, because I didn't even know she had the condition until after the show, all the commentary brought it to the forefront. And so many people who are, there's a basketball, retired basketball player. I think his last name is Villanueva or something like that. I didn't know him when he was playing. You know, so of course I didn't recognize his name, now retired. And he's a young guy. It's not like he's, you know, some old dude who played in the 50s. So, but anyway, of course, his comments were noted to make it to the airwaves because he has the same illness. And he felt, of course, right away that Chris Rock was way out of line and you know, had every slap coming to him and maybe more. But then there's my boy Craig Melvin on MSNBC. Now, that is my boy. You know, I love that cat. And I think out of everybody, you know, his was probably the most stirring, maybe. And he said, in reference to Jada Pinkett Smith, the man beside you had to make the point, you know. And, of course, he's been in hot water ever since having said that. And he had other things, too, but that was the thrust of the opening salvo of his commentary. The man beside you had to make the point, you know, and there it is for me right there. As black men, do we even know, you know, what time it is? Do we even know a relationship that is above the initial stages of, you know, of that adversarial theme that exists with so many, it seems, in the black community, that it seems that somebody, and, you know, I'm a black man, so I'm going to say it for black men, seems like we're always having to earn our stripes, you know, whether we're having to earn our stripes in our own home, whether we're having to earn it in pursuit of love, whether we're having to earn it in American society. And why do I say that? Well, I say it because this is a patriarchal system America is, but it's a white male patriarchal system. White men run it. But whenever we hear comments about, you know, the debilitating issues of men in American society and how men are this and men, If people talk like black men are considered equal to white men, and nothing could be further from the truth, farther from the truth. So it's like, you know, the question is never asked after white men are shot down or otherwise put in their place or whatever the situation may be. You know, no one has ever asked a black man's opinion about a white man's behavior in dictating social policy in American society. And that drives, you know, that always leads me to invisibilize, like what Ralph Ellison says. And I remember I used to say a lot about the invisibilization effect on me. And I would say it to friends, you know, and colleagues alike until I stopped saying it because they got tired of hearing me say that. And they got so frustrated with me making a comment that they would start just making disparaging comments to me for saying it. So I just thought, how appropriate. Your reaction is exactly the point I'm trying to make. You know, that for some reason, I don't have a right to express my feelings. And I guess it's for fear of. I don't have any idea what the blank word is for fear of, but so much of it seems to have to do with this stereotypic black male image of being this, you know, violent, sex-crazed animal who's strung out on drugs and can't do anything but shoot people, you know, or whatever. And my problem is I don't know any black men like that. You know, I mean, in my family, in my circle, in myself, I have a right to my anger and I have a right to whatever fallout that might stir up. But I don't know where that line is drawn, just like when I'm looking at Will and Chris. You know, I'm calling by their first names like I know them. I don't know where that line, you know, what is acceptable black male anger? What is acceptable black male rage? It doesn't seem to be something that is allowed in any form in American society like white men get to do. I mean, just in our lifetime, son, just think of what we've seen white men do. Forget whether they've done it to black men, although that's, how do we ignore that? But what we've seen white men able to do in American society, and the jury is out. It's always out for debate what is within the law and what is without, you know, on the outskirts of the law. And it's always individually determined based on the outcome of the jury. So what is not acceptable one day is acceptable the next. Case in point, you know, it's been, what, 60 years, 70 years, 60, 55, however long, how many years has it been since Emmett Till was, you know, brutally murdered, you know, but only just now lynching is a federal offense. And some in Congress have an issue with that being a law. How? How do people think black men feel about this kind of shit? You know, yeah, I mean, I hear the wailings of black women all the time, but black men ain't even allowed to do that. You know, so I don't know this whole Will Smith, Chris Rock thing, and you know, reading further into Chris Rock's story, you know, and hearing him talk about the humiliation that he experienced growing up, how he was a small guy, you know, and a black guy. So he had a double whammy. He was small and black growing up in his hood, and he was always picked on, you know, until one day he had enough of it. He put a brick in his, you know, and he smacked the bully upside the head with his, you know, concealed brick book bag. There you go. And knocked him to the ground. And what Chris said, you know, then he did the Joe Pesci on him. He started kicking the hell out of him, you know, and he was afraid that he had killed the dude at once. Yeah, Joe Pesci.
Yeah, stomp out. You
know, yeah, because you have to see Goodfellas to know. But but that wasn't, you know, he at one point was afraid that maybe he killed the dude, but there was no joy in that. It was fear. And the fear wasn't that he may have killed him. The fear was that kind of anger could have come from him. And that's the issue that he has been dealing with all his life. Not being picked on, that's left its mark. You know, not having, you know, been ostracized in the community growing up, that's left its mark. But that he could get so angry that he could release the Kraken, so to say, in such a way that he couldn't control, knowing that he lives in a society that demands every day that black men control that kind of anger for fear of historical retribution. You don't get to be mad. I don't get to be mad without the history of black male anger just being thundered down upon us. I don't care what kind of relationship you're in, my man, care what kind of relationship I'm in. You raise your voice at a black woman and you're going to hear the historical repercussions of this affront about your black male anger. But they won't say black male anger. They'll just say you was a black man. When you say you was a black man, they'll just say your anger, you know. Yeah. And once that label's attached, there's no removing it. It's all your anything said is always suspect. It's always a concern. It's always a question. Uh-oh, forget what we're talking about. Is he about to show his anger? Is he about to raise his voice? Is he about, you know, to go off? And, you know, what's ironic is that we joke about how mama was always the one who kicked ass in the family. It's a strange situation that, you know, that raised a question inside of me. You know, the question being, looking at these three-pronged reactions to this one situation of being humiliated, Jada for the joke, Chris for being slapped, and Will for doing the slapping, and, you know, also feeling the humiliation that he felt both from her and, you know, being her husband. Yeah. So it made me, and I mentioned it to you, you know, early on, it gave me pause to consider what has been the most humiliating experience of my life, you know, and I can tell you right off the bat, it comes from high school, and that's not to say there haven't been others along the way, but it comes from high school and having to stand up, you know, we had what was called swim gym back then in the 60s, and I went to Inglewood High School, and beginner swimming. I wanted to learn how to swim, even though I had a tremendous fear of water. That's the crazy thing. I have a fear of water, but I love the water. But nevertheless, but we had to do swim class butt-ass naked, you know, and I didn't know that was a requirement. I probably would have joined ROTC. But my first day of swim class, we were required, and I brought swimming trunks with me. And the instructor, I still remember his name, but for fear of being sued by his family, I'm not going to say it. And I saw the dude one day at Park Manor Bowling Alley, and he didn't remember me. I wouldn't expect him to. And I didn't even bring it up. I just, you know, he was the football coach, and he was very popular. But there I was, you know, being required to take off and being laughed at for even bringing my swimming trunks with me. And we all just had to stay there as naked as the day we came into this world. For me, because of having a somewhat of a complex about, you know, not being that well endowed, you know, it was a total affront to everything about me as far as my young malehood, you know, I don't even want to say manhood yet, just malehood was concerned. Something that has haunted me all my life, something that has left an indelible mark. And how do you deal with something like that? So I thought about what Chris was saying, you know, that for me the humiliation had an element of anger, you know, for sure, embarrassment, no question about it, but nowhere to take it. And I had to just wonder if that's part of why Chris Rock just, yeah, people, you know, here's the real reason. Here's what I miss about newspapers. Unlike the news you get on the internet, there was never a column or an editorial that said, here's the real reason why Chris Rock did not sue Will Smith, did not react to it. You know, there was never anything in the newspapers that ever suggested opinions like that. You know, they were writers, and they wrote, you know, and automatically you took what they wrote as their opinion. But there was never this hearty, here's the real reason. So I read to say, here's the real reason why Chris Rock did not respond. And that's why I was wondering, how much do you know about Chris Rock to make a statement like that? Well, my voice went high, didn't it? I had that helium in it.
That's all right.
You know,
that's a legitimate question.
Yeah, you know. So anyway, man, that's kind of where I am right now, and with the question, and very apparent to me that I'm going to have some kind of residual reaction to everything that I continue to read about. Here's the real reason. But go ahead,
yeah,
man. Let me get out of the
still,
way, man.
And still, you know, these many days afterwards, and we're still really asking the question: what just happened?
Yeah.
I mean, we know that
yeah,
Will Smith flexed.
Yeah.
We know that Chris Rock made a joke. We know Jada Pinkett
yeah.
rolled her eyes. We know Will laughed and got up and slapped Chris Rock, and then later on won his first award. But what happened? You know, but why?
But
you know, we talked
happened?
About that.
And why?
But why?
Yeah.
Why did he get up?
Yeah.
Why did he smack him? Why did Chris
yeah.
not do anything?
Yeah.
You know, why
yeah.
did, why? Why?
Yeah.
Why didn't
Jada, you know, restrain Will before he got up? Why didn't she, you know, grab his arm and say, you know, we'll have our moment in court later, you know? Why didn't Will even take it upon himself to make in his speech an acknowledgement of what is the ailment again?
Alopecia.
Alopecia.
You're going to make me forget.
No, I won't, because I'm going to keep on asking you. There's no way you can forget. But you see, I stopped giving my expression so that you wouldn't forget. And I'm going to get that alopecia.
I appreciate it. It gives me a chance to practice my radio voice.
Practice, yeah, man. Yeah, right. Right, you know. I mean, yeah, so anyway, the point you're making, go ahead, man. Let me stop.
Just that we were, you know, that we're still trying to figure it out. But at the same time, we're dealing with that term you used earlier with that shadow. And rather it be we're dealing with Chris, Will's, or Jada's shadows, or we're dealing with our own personal shadows. You mentioned Chris and dealing with being bullied, you know, and if you look back on Will's childhood, he had to deal with, you know, dealing with his father who was abusive with his mother.
Right.
You know? And I'm not trying to, you know, ladies and gentlemen, we're not trying to psychoanalyze, you know, the guys, but again,
yeah, we are.
okay. That's what's going to end up happening, right?
Armchair psychology. That's what we do. That's what you call it, Monday, you know. We're Monday
morning
psychology.
But you know, you mentioned that about Chris and dealing with that shadow now, pow, and all that stuff gets triggered. You know, and the fact that Will did this movie about King Richard. I mean, like how much shadow did he have to deal with portraying a cat like Richard Williams? You know,
well,
he kind of acknowledged that.
People chuckled.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
But he said, because he hadn't stepped out of character. You know, if I can right quick, we used to, when I was involved in this spiritual retreat thing, it's only going to take a sec, we would always do role plays, you know, and in our role plays at the end of whatever it was, people would assume roles to help people see the issues played out in front of them. But at the end of it, it was always a requirement to remind everybody who partook in those role plays to take a moment and say out loud that they are no longer the role they played and they have returned to the person they've always been. And they had to acknowledge that so we could release them from that role. You know, and it's like when I heard Will say that, it's like, does anybody give an actor a chance to say, okay, I ain't that dude anymore? Like, well, you know, has Denzel gotten past being Hamlet? Go ahead.
I think Denzel's got past being Hamlet, but that's a good point.
We hope.
You know, but I think that's something that these actors have to deal with, you know, whatever their technique is. But that's a good point. So anyway, like I said, I didn't want to get too much in it. But since you mentioned the bullying, I thought it was just as important to talk about Will. And I'm not familiar with Jada's upbringing, you know, so I don't know what her childhood was like. But all these things that are that we deal with, that we as individuals deal with, as we as a family deal with, and then you got to deal with their own dynamic of dealing with Hollywood. Woohoo! You know, it's just a whole other world, you know, this whole other world, this whole other entity. And investigating, what was it? Investigating the Hollywood incident? Like it's a separate, you know, city.
Like a separate universe, man. You know, like it's this world of pretend, that we treat like reality. And we assign these characters who perform as being representatives of our own reality. We give these characters life. We make them real, and they're pretending. And we make them so real that we hold them, you know, to their roles. And this is who we want them to be. This is who we make them to be. This is why when something happens to them, it happens to us. You know, because we've made these characters, these pretenders, come to life, man. Like you mentioned, well, Jada had kind of a, like Will talked about it in an interview that they both read. You know, he said that she grew up in a family that was relatively, you know, promiscuous. And that's what she was used to, where he wasn't used to that. You know, so, you know, here's my question to you, man. You know, what does the life of privilege, and I ain't talking about white privilege, I'm talking about in America, the life of privilege, and I think you know what I mean. What does the life of privilege offer those who don't get a chance to experience it? You know, and I'm not trying to put you on the spot, Dan. It's just speculation. I think about my life, and I think about, and we've talked about this on past shows, and I think about my life when it comes to my idea of success. And I have a problem being able to come up with my idea of success if it's not reflective of a lot of money in the coffers. I have a struggle with my idea of success if it's not being able to do certain things that was required, that was asked of me at different times in my life, like going through a particular time in my life where I was financially strapped, but the youngest son was getting ready to enter college. And I had no way financially to be able to help with tuition. So can I call myself being a success when I can't help out in that way? Is the success reflective of, yeah, but your influence on your son got him into that place of thinking about going to college and subsequently being admitted to Morehouse when you yourself never went to college? You know, but those debates bounce back and forth in my head. You know, so what the life of privilege doesn't require that I need to think like that. But then how do I think when I live a life of privilege? Does that make me separate and above, you know, the rank and file of normal existence? So anyway, you know, man, you know, I don't know. What do you think, man? Or have I taken you completely off track?
No, to try to answer or respond to your question, you know, the I'm thinking about those things that you mentioned that bounce in our heads, and those I would guess more in that privileged state, as you put it, I think don't deal with those extra questions that we me and you maybe tend to ask or tend to judge ourselves or what have you. Recently I've been watching like a couple of these Netflix series with these white people who basically swindle people out of money, you know, but in their eyes and their mission or whatever, you know, they never fail, you know, so their idea of success is that they're always being successful, even when they're failing. I mean, and that's a whole, you know, another episode about mindset, I think, you know, something like that. But it's just that ability, again, I'm just kind of guessing, just throwing it out there, to not even identify measuring success or even identifying failure, if you will. I mean, failure, yeah, there's failure when you learn something from it, but just that ability to not keep second-guessing yourself sometimes, or as we always joke about the term Catholic guilt, you know, dealing with that, again, bringing us back to shadow energy. That's just, again, just a guess and just throwing it out there. But and still continue about talking about shadow energy, I was thinking back to one of the earlier comments I made, and I said, damn, y'all can't never talk about my anger issues. That's the other Will. And looking back now, it's interesting that that's the thing that I kind of reflected off of first. And then you talked about humiliation as well. And I'm thinking about those times when I may have been angry and then later on dealt with the humiliation of being angry. Rather it was, you know, being drunk, or rather feeling like I was sober and felt like I was in the right, but, you know, something that else you had to deal with. I don't know. I mean, both ways, you know. Like I mentioned, when Will sat back down and he told him about not having his wife's name in the mouth again, twice, you know, and it was just that vibration that I felt from him. That was the first thing I think that was, the, you know, I talked to you, was the first one I talked about that anger, that rage. You know, and I never really identified it, you know, really thought about it. And that's what I'm just saying, a lot of us are dealing with whatever it is we're getting from it, you know. And then at the same time, talking with you and doing this show reminds me that, you know, we take things so seriously. I take things so seriously. We take these situations of Hollywood so seriously. But, you know, I mean, there's more to this, you know, about just health, you know, about how we get along with each other, you know, how we interact with each other. You said they used to call it the Academy Awards, now it's just the Oscars, you know, like it's just, you know, it was something of respect, Academy Awards, you know, that makes you put your chin up even when you just say it rather than the Oscars.
Well, I mean, the Oscars probably do the same thing for them because they're the ones who decide to call it that. But go ahead.
Well, I guess I'm just the last of that old school that had that feeling. But my point was, I was just identifying with my own issues of dealing with shadow. But and going back to Will again, and not only dealing with his father, you know, I like Jayden, you know, and then I look at the relationship with him and his son and how that's been a struggle. And then I think about me and my son's relationship. Then, of course, I think about our relationship, you know, so again.
And we've had our moments, that's for sure.
Yeah. You know, and even with this, you know, like watching like Will and his son reminds me a lot of me and Jackson, you know, so it's, again, it's, and I'm just kind of opening up and just kind of sharing just how this incident, how it's kind of, and I don't want to use the word trigger. I think using the term trigger is starting to be not used correctly. I think it's more of an excuse for people and not really understanding what that means. But I just wanted to just kind of share with some of the things that I identify with, and it's interesting to see these things that other people are identifying but not actually acknowledging that that's what they're, you know, identifying. I hope that makes sense.
Turn it into a teachable moment. What does trigger mean to you? You know, forget about how it's being used. Just throw that out the window. What does it mean to you? What is, you know, what does it mean to be triggered? But what do you think people mean when they use the term, when it refers to your behavior?
Well, I think trigger is something that somebody has experienced, and that experience, that emotion, that, I don't know, energy, whatever you want to call it, that's something that takes that person to that moment, to that feeling, to that whatever it is that resonates within them.
Mm-hmm.
And I think sometimes there are people who may use it, not really understanding, or maybe even haven't experienced what it is they're talking about that's being triggered.
So do you think like people use it more as an external reaction as opposed to an internal issue? You know, like, got triggered, like it was something somebody else did, and not a trigger being something that is what is used as a response to a moment, you know, like.
Yes.
Somebody slapping Chris Rock triggers something in me, you know, but it triggers something in me. It doesn't cause me to want to get up and slap Chris Rock too, you know, if I'm following you right. Right. Like
or slap anybody else. Right.
Yeah, or slap anybody else, you know. Okay. I mean, I would agree with you. You know, when I was a counselor, you know, we used to tell folks early in recovery, you know, to avoid those triggers. Mm-hmm. And to a person, you know, the client would want to know, well, what do you mean? And it would always be avoid those old people, old places, and old things.
Mm-hmm.
And those old people, old places, and old things have too many triggers there that would cause you to be tempted to get high again. You know, so it's a matter of understanding that it's not the old people, the old places, and the old things. It's how you used to do the old people, the old places, and the old things that will stir a familiar response inside of you, almost like a reflex or a muscle memory reaction, you know.
Yeah.
But that's the power of addiction, you know. And, of course, the power of addiction is driven by denial, you know, the inability or refusal to accept the obvious situation. So if I'm hearing you right, you know, it's like, now, y'all ain't going deep enough to understand triggers. You want to make it external. This is an internal experience, if I'm hearing you right.
You hear me right?
Yeah. Yeah, I totally agree with you there, man, you know. And so the question is, how do we get, you know, to the solution, or how do we get to the understanding of the triggers? And I think that's what seems to be lost in this debate about, you know, this black triad, you know, that we ain't looking at triggers, you know, not internal triggers. We're looking at an external reaction and response, and we want to call it a trigger. And I agree with you. I think that's how it's been. It's been almost glamorized that way.
Yeah,
know?
It's that. I'm sorry.
No, go ahead.
It's like you said. To me, the external would be again the glitz and glamour. You know, the Hollywood, the living this life that they've made that you live in now, in dealing with. A functioning schizophrenia, first of all, being an actor, doing these people, being a black actor, actress, and doing these things and dealing with the way that white people do things, you know, so not only are you, you know, you're even acting in real life sometimes and still trying to, you know, and I hate to say it like this, but shuck and jive. Again, we asked the question Monday, when do we have to stop being perfect? When do we have to stop being what they want us to be? So not only are they being who they want them to be, but then they got to be other people on stage too. So how the heck does that dynamic go? How do you have a healthy relationship? Like, how do they deal with that? How do they deal with that? You know, there's only a few people who've been married for a long time, you know, how do they maintain that kind of relationship? But anyway, I'm
and
sorry.
That doesn't mean just because they were together a long time, they were happy. I mean, I have relatives who were married 60 years.
Amen.
I have relatives today who've been married 30 and 40 years. And that doesn't, you know, that some in most cases have grown closer through their trials and tribulations or the challenges, or whatever, you know, and have learned to adapt and adjust their own particulars to meet the particulars of the other. But just as many have just grown out of touch with each other, but have stayed together nevertheless. But, you know, I have other relatives, man, who have married longer than I've been on earth, you know, and they were anything collectively but happy. Yeah, individually, you know, they did what they had to do. Like my dear old aunt told me, you know, sometimes we have to do what we have to do. You know, and she didn't need to explain it any further, not when it came from those who were, you know, my elders, who meant they were like coming up in the 30s and 40s. You know, I mean, the 30s and 40s, how close was that to the Emancipation Proclamation that came without a handbook? Black folks didn't know how to be American. They didn't know what it meant, you know, what freedom meant. They had to learn as they went. They had to do what they had to do. Man, when she told me that, my Aunt Edith, you know, that brought history right up to my doorstep. It's like, yeah, don't be thinking about your elders as being elders, that's how they came into this life. Think of them as having to grow up like you've had. you've had to grow up, but think about the time that they grew up. You know, born in 47 is a little bit different than living in 37. You know, a little bit different. Yeah, so anyway, yeah, right on, man. Yeah, right on. Beautiful, man. So I can, yeah. Man, it's unusual. I can see by the clock, it's quitting time, man. And you got 5 minutes to land this airplane, right on. That's always been the goal, everybody, to get to the 7:55 mark and be ready to say goodbye and wrap it up. So, right wow. on, man. So I'm not going to say anything else. Go, bro. Land this airplane. Let's get out of here while the getting is good.
Well, you know what? You know, no, I'm just playing. And another thing. All right, there. As always, man, it's always fun and honorable as well, doing these shows with you.
Amen, man. Definitely
again, ladies,
that way for me.
Yeah, and maybe Monday, we might find out something about Ketanji Brown Jackson's. Maybe you might find out.
He just
right?
couldn't resist, could he?
Yeah, I'm just saying.
Okay,
maybe we'll find out. So, all right.
Yeah.
Ladies and gentlemen, this is the Greenhouse Effect Radio Show. We are an opportunity to provide an opportunity to exercise critical thinking, experience a renewed self-awareness, and maybe
Amen.
Even a deeper connection to others and their experiences, especially when we share interpretations and feelings.
Yeah.
As always, ladies and gentlemen, we ask that you be safe, be blessed, and always be yourself because, hey, everybody's taken. I'm Will. That's Bill over there. It's my man.
Love you, man.
All right. Love you too, Dad. Until Monday. See you soon, amigo.
Wow. We still got 3 minutes. The song can play all the way out. All right, man. Amen,
all right.
Man. Amen.
Good night.